morning, everyone. It's a privilege to be here. Thank you for welcoming me and my family. It's such a blessing to have two ecclesias in such close proximity. In fact, a couple months ago, we had the privilege of going to visit the Surrey Ecclesia. And we spent a whole weekend there, the Saturday, fellowshipping with various families. The Sunday as well, they had Sunday school and a potluck. And it's really such a great group of people they have there. They're all so enthusiastic and they're all positive and there's lots of families. So there was sort of kids and activity going on the whole time and they had good food. And as we left, I had this real sense of what a wonderful place that is. And as I was on the ferry coming back, I thought, well, you know, it's a little bit of the grass is greener on the other side of the water effect happening here. You know, you go to someplace new and everybody's fresh and everybody's cheerful. And I'm sure that they don't have a perfect ecclesia over there. I'm sure that every one of those wonderful families brings some kind of quirk to the table. But there is that appeal of a fresh start, of going somewhere where everything is new and a new beginning. And if you look at a new house, it's kind of like that, right? You walk in and it's all the paint is fresh and the walls aren't dinged up. About 12 years ago, we had the privilege of building a new hall. And it's wonderful, you know, and it still looks new. But if you start to look close, you'll see that the carpet is starting to show some wear in certain areas. And all this moving of chairs around has sort of gouged out the drywall up and down the stairs. And we had a plumbing incident, and that blew a few ceiling tiles that were never quite fixed up right. And the door to our storage room is impossible to open. And after 12 years, we still can't get the automatic lights outside to come on the proper schedule. And computer programming also has this phenomenon. When I go to write a new computer program, it's a wonderful feeling. It's a blank slate. I can build whatever I want. You know, if you're a painter, you probably have the same thing when you approach a canvas. It's like, I can do anything here. But with computer programs, you rarely get to write the first program. You're usually coming in and there's been other programmers there before you, and they had a different way of doing things than you did. And so you have to adapt to their way or try to adapt them to your way. And then you find out you made some mistakes along the way, so you got to roll certain things back. And then management decides you're going to go in a different direction, and half of it gets sliced off. And before you know it, what you're working with is, in computer terms, we call it cruft. It's this buildup of little bits of leftovers of all kinds of things that you wouldn't have put there if you'd have started with this vision in mind. You know, physics talks about entropy, right? Every nice and perfect system degenerates. And it happens in our lives, too. You know, we look at the youth and we see it so full of promise, so many opportunities, so many roads before them. And there's a famous song in the 80s called The River, and it talks about the contrast of that fresh start with looking back 20 years later at all the things that really happened in your life and all those things that cannot be undone and the decisions that cannot be revoked. And I suspect a lot of midlife crises start this way, where you realize, I can't go back and redo it all. And I've ended up somewhere that wasn't really where I thought I wanted to go. Now I want to take you to Acts chapter 2, because it has a new beginning, a fresh start. You'll know from the context what fresh start we're talking about, but Acts chapter 2, verses 43 to 47. Now, this isn't quite exactly what I experienced at the Surrey Ecclesia, but there is some of that similar sentiment here. Starting with verse 43, and everyone kept feeling a sense of awe, and many wonders and signs were taking place through the apostles, and all those who had believed were together and they had all things in common. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all, as anyone might have need. And day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. Can you imagine being in that environment? I mean, what a thrilling, fresh start. Day by day, everybody working together. If we turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, find a bit of a different story. Verse 11. For I've been informed concerning you, brethren, by Chloe's people, that there are quarrels among you. Now I mean this, that each one of you is saying, I am of Paul, and I of Apollos, and I of Cephas, and I of Christ. Has Christ been divided? Paul was not crucified for you, was he? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? Galatians chapter 2. When Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he began to withdraw and to hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas, in the presence of all, if you, being a Jew, live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, how is it you compel the Gentiles to live like the Jews? All in one mind, meals together with gladness. And what do we have here? Division, conflict, public condemnation. How does this happen to the true church of God? It's entropy. It's cruft. It's this buildup of stuff. And over time, you know, there's dings in our drywall and we have a plumbing problem and the building starts to degenerate. And how can we avoid this? How can we prevent our communities from imploding under the sheer weight of an accumulation of year after year of events like this? Well, part of the problem is unavoidable. You know, I'm clearly an imperfect person, but I can go to Surrey for one weekend and I can mind my P's and Q's and I can put on a brave face and smile and we all have a great time. And I come back to my ecclesia. I've been at my ecclesia for 20 years now. That's about 1,000 Sundays. I'm sure that over 1,000 Sundays, I have managed to annoy, disappoint, neglect, or offend every single other person in my ecclesia. I mean, 1,000 opportunities. How could you miss? And the opposite is also true, that over that 1,000 Sundays, every single person there, almost, has managed to rub me the wrong way on some day. I don't know what was going on. I don't know where they got that idea in their head. I don't know what happened. But you can't avoid it, right? We're all imperfect. And it's so tempting to take the easy way out, to look for a fresh start, to go somewhere where you can just erase all that and build again. I mean, this isn't just true of our ecclesias. It's true of any long-term relationship with other people. It's true of our marriages. It's true of our families. It's true of our workplaces. The problem with a fresh start is that these things are the symptoms, and we're all carriers of the disease. Yet God chose to take groups of imperfect people and put them together in ecclesias. So there must be a way that we can overcome this problem. So what is it? And I think the answer is forgiveness. Forgiveness is the fresh start. Now, when I come to meeting on a Sunday morning, usually, when I do think about forgiveness, I tend to think about forgiveness for me. know, the things that I've done that I want God to forgive me for having done them. But I don't spend a lot of time thinking about forgiveness for everyone else. Have I forgiven everyone else for 1,000 Sundays worth of offenses? Have I made it easy for them to forgive me? Do I even know if they've forgiven me? Matthew 5:23 says, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift." What's my reaction when somebody doesn't forgive me? Okay, I did something, I said I was sorry, and they don't forgive me. At this point, I say that's their problem. Right? They're unforgiving, clearly. Bible says forgive, and they're not forgiving me. Now, how stubborn of them. What does this chapter say? It's your problem. Okay, if somebody hasn't forgiven you, you have a job to do. And I'm sure it doesn't mean go and lecture them about how they should be more forgiving, right? You have to go to them and find a path for them to forgive you. It's your responsibility. Now, forgiveness is a new coat of paint on an old building. Matthew chapter 5, verse 7 says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." Now think of this. What does it take to be considered merciful? What is the fundamental prerequisite to having mercy on someone? Well, they must have done something to you, right? Can't be merciful to someone if they haven't done something to you. There's a just requirement of the law. We read it in Matthew 18. You owe me so much money. This is illegal. This is legitimate. You owe me. This is justice. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Right? Our eyes are of equal value. That's what the law requires. And the law is just. This is justice. But in order to be merciful, you have to have poked my eye out. And I have to refrain from poking your eye out. I have to let that go. I have to let justice go and say, no, I'm gonna be merciful. And that's actually just having mercy once. To be merciful says I have to do this over and over and over again. You know, and the king in Matthew 18 waives his right to justice, and so should we. You know, another analogy is forgiveness is an oil change. When your car engine is running, there's all these hard parts that are working together in close proximity and doing all kinds of stuff. And if you never change your oil, what happens to your vehicle? Right? There's an accumulation. There's a buildup. There's just a little bit here, and at the time it doesn't seem like much, and it builds up and it builds up, and eventually the whole engine will seize up on you. We've got to let that stuff go. Right? Got to unwind that cap, just let it all go, and put some fresh oil so that we can smoothly work together. To read from Ephesians chapter 4, starting at verse 25. "Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor. For we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And do not give the devil an opportunity. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you." This is a big section, and it has two main components. And the first component is saying, you have got to change. You have got to change your behavior. Okay, this is a prerequisite to our being here. We have got to change what we do. But we also have to forgive each other when we don't pull it off. Okay, this also is a fundamental requirement. It's pretty tough to have forgiveness when there isn't a commitment to change. But if we're going to have that new car smell in our ecclesia, if we're going to have that fresh start, we've got to be tender-hearted. So we have this real temptation then of starting fresh. New ecclesia, new spouse, new job, new family. But the hard way is the best way, and it's God's way, and it's to have a forgiving heart. So I'd like to conclude with Colossians chapter 3. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And beyond all things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity.